The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
How socialism and government control turns people into zombies. Plus, Marjorie Taylor Greene has the last laugh. And John Kerry thinks he's really special. He's not. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast. Do you own a dog? Let me tell you about Kodak, my stepdaughter Jay's 100-pound dog. He has a My Pillow dog pillow, and Jay says it's the only dog bed that Kodak, who is still a puppy, hasn't destroyed. It's durable. Kodak loves it, as you can see in the photo. My Pillow dog beds are made with the same patented fill as My Pillow to help keep your dog cool and comfortable. The inner bed and removable zippered over are both washable and dryable. My Pillow dog beds come with a limited 10-year warranty. Prices range from $39.98 to $139.98, but every dog bed is 50% off with promo code Dinesh. So here's your chance. Call 800-876-0227 and use promo code Dinesh. Or just go to mypillow.com, but make sure to use promo code Dinesh. It'll make your dog very happy.
This voice. But times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Socialism and government control have a very strange effect on people. My wife Debbie was in the supermarket the other day, and she said that for the first time, she stepped back for a little bit and was just watching the people in the supermarket, and they appeared to be kind of in a daze. They appeared to be sort of walking almost aimlessly around. There was no interaction among anyone. People were sort of avoiding contact or even eye contact. And people just seemed defeated, depressed, beaten down, zombified. In other words, Debbie noticed that the people around her were sort of acting like zombies. And then she said that, kind of to her horror, she realized that she was one of them. She was acting like a zombie. And she began to comment about how all these controls, these coronavirus controls over the past year, have sort of changed the way that we operate and act in public space. We are not ourselves. And it flashed my mind back a couple of years ago when our little film team was in Prague shooting the film Death of a Nation. And I noticed that the people in Prague are like that. And I commented at the time that this was the after effect of communism, of 40 years of communist dictatorial control. It had sort of beaten the life out of the people there. Now, remember, we were in Prague long after communism collapsed. The Berlin Wall came down in 1989. Prague was free by the early 90s, as was most of Eastern Europe. So this was 20 years later, and yet the after effect was clearly there. A friend of mine who does business in China says the Chinese people, who are, of course, part of the greatest totalitarianism in the world, a system stretching over 1 billion people, the Chinese people act zombified. My friend recounts a scene where he was driving to the airport in China, and you see all these Chinese people, and it's raining, and the water is pouring down, and they're standing there on the street with rice bowls, and they're all eating rice with chopsticks, and the rain is dripping down their face and going into their food, and yet they sort of monotonously keep eating. It's almost a horrifying sight. It shows really what people can be reduced to. But this is not just a problem of coronavirus or something happening in some distant land. There's a very interesting book about American Indian reservations. It's by David Truer, a member of the Ojibwe tribe, and it's called Res Life. And he's talking about life on the American Indian Red Lake reservation in Minnesota. And he talks about the fact that because of this government control, the American Indians are almost a captive population of the U.S. government. Nothing operates on the reservation. He goes, there are no hair salons, no Starbucks, no Einstein Brothers bagels, no cell phone stores, no Radio Shacks, no Jiffy Lubes, no McDonald's, no Arby's, no rent-a-car centers, no car dealerships, no Gaps, no Old Navy stores. There aren't even any real billboards. What signs do exist are small, hand-painted on plywood, often propped up against a tree. And he goes, all of this nothing on a reservation the same size as Rhode Island. So this is ultimately the enervating, deflating, dehumanizing effect of socialism. There's even a very interesting scene toward the end of Orwell's 1984, where the life is beaten out of Winston at the end, and he meets up with the girl, and the two of them had been rebels. They had sort of conspired together to fight against this evil regime symbolized by what Orwell calls Big Brother, the socialist state. And as they meet at the end, you can almost see that their relationship has been destroyed. She says to him, I betrayed you to the government. He says, I betrayed you. And then a little bit later, she says, all you care about is yourself. And he replies, all you care about is yourself. And then at the end, he says, we must meet again. And she replies, yes, we must meet again. And of course, they both know they never will. But the point is here, they are reduced to this robotic, monotonous, almost bisyllabic way of talking. They have been zombified. And so as we try to pull our way out of coronavirus, and we're not going to pull out our way out of democratic leftist control right away, but we could do that in a couple of years, let's remember that we're not zombies. We're human beings with dignity and energy and creativity and innovation and enterprise and ambition. So recognizing that we're not zombies, let's stop acting like them. Got problems with the IRS? I got to tell you about some time not too long ago when the big bad U.S. government tried to make an example out of me. And I know firsthand the importance of having proper representation to protect your freedom as well as your finances from being taken by the IRS. Ryan, Danica, and the Christian folks at South Coast Tax will discuss your unique situation and create a tailored framework of how to attack the situation head-on with the IRS and allow you a true fresh start. South Coast Tax has a settlement average of 3 cents on the dollar or 97% reduction rate, along with an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. With 20 years of experience alone, Ryan told me that he has yet to see a tax situation that has stumped him, and that's impressive considering the size of the tax laws. Call Ryan at 800-TAX-3156 or check out their website, southcoasttaxresolution.com. You'll see for yourself it will be the best move you ever made and the first step in getting your financial freedom back. That's 800-TAX-3156. So Marjorie Taylor Greene beat them after all, and she knows it. She tweeted out this morning that she literally woke up laughing. And I kind of smiled when I saw that because she's right. She won. Now, on the first glance, you might say, wait a minute, Dinesh, what do you mean she won? The Democrats voted, and here was the vote, 230 to 199, to kick her off her two committees. But as Marjorie Greene herself pointed out, when you're in the minority, being on a committee doesn't count for much. The Democrats, the majority party in the House, really controls the agenda of those committees. So this was a kind of symbolic gesture. Now, here's the key point. How many Republicans voted to boot Marjorie Taylor Greene? This was really the key issue from the beginning. Would the Republican Party sell her out? And the answer is no, it didn't. 11 Republicans voted against her. And here they are. This is the kind of dishonorable role. Carlos Jimenez, Mark Jacobs, John Katko, Young Kim, disappointing there. Adam Kinzinger, predictable. Nicole Maliotakis, Maria Alvarez-Salazar, Mario Diaz-Balart, both from Florida, Chris Smith of New Jersey, Fred Upton and Brian Fitzpatrick. Now, this is pretty much the same crew that voted against Trump, so it doesn't come as a surprise. But by and large, think of it, there are some 220 or so Republicans in the House, and the vast, vast majority of them hung together. And the leadership didn't sell her out. Now, we need to back up here, because when I started talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene and brought her on this podcast, it was reported that Kevin McCarthy, the GOP leader in the House, was negotiating with the Democrats to kick her off one committee if they would agree not to bring it before the House floor. So he was essentially arranging, according to reports, a kind of partial sellout. And this is the Republican default position. They always go to this. How can we control the damage and, you know, beat up on our own side, but not too much? And it's the accomplishment of the Democrats. It's one thing for them to cancel us, but to get us to cancel ourselves is real triumph. And they're really good at this. And we are really bad at it. But I think that our podcast right here and you had an impact. Why? Because at the end of the podcast, I called upon you to call Kevin McCarthy's office and tell him, don't sell this woman out. Why? Because the fact of the matter is, and you can see it for yourself, she's not a kook. It may be that in the past she entertained opinions, you know, there were some all kinds of speculation, for example, after the Las Vegas shooting, how come we've heard nothing about it? And it is strange. This was a horrendous shooting. We've heard nothing about it. It's almost like the event never happened. And so, yeah, all kinds of weird speculations began. And maybe she traded in them and shared them. So what? So what? The principle at stake is really clear. Are we, the Republicans, going to allow the other side to choose who sits on Republican slots on congressional committees? This is outrageous. Reminds me of a scene in the movie Beckett, where Beckett is confronted by a bishop who says, you better stand up for the church. And a priest has been accused of some kind of being a kind of malefactor. And Beckett goes, well, is he guilty? Is he guilty? And the bishop tells him, it doesn't matter if he's guilty. The real issue is, shouldn't he be tried in the ecclesiastical courts? That's the issue, preserving the right of the clergy to try their own. If Marjorie Taylor Greene has committed some horrendous offense, Republicans can figure that out. They can deal with her. But this idea of letting Democrats have a say-so on who serves on Republican seats on committees, absolutely horrific. And so the argument I made was, listen, they have the power to do it to us, but we might soon have the power to do it to them. The midterm elections are coming up. Let's start throwing some Democrats off their committees if we take the House. So we're going to teach them a bitter lesson, kind of the way we've done with the Supreme Court, with the filibuster. We've learned that when we are treated badly, we should not hesitate to treat them badly in return. Now, coming back to my point about Marjorie Taylor Greene and how she came out ahead. She held her own party. Her own party didn't sell her out. Number two, she's raised a whole bunch of money on this. And I think rightly so. People have rallied to her support. They've realized that her real crime is being an ordinary woman and a Trumpster and a patriot and being outspoken and unafraid. And she's a fighter. That's what scares the left. Same thing that scares them about Trump. But finally, Marjorie Taylor Greene has emerged from this as being an extremely well-known person. She's become a national figure. Now, think of how hard that is to do when you're a freshman congresswoman. By and large, most people serve 10 terms in Congress and no one knows who they are. It reminds me kind of that scene in Evita where Perón is talking about his generals and Evita goes, most of your generals wouldn't be recognized by their own grandmothers. And this is true of most people in Congress. Can you name 10 members of Congress? I can't. Can you name your own congressman? I can, but most of us can't. We don't know who these people are, but we do know who Marjorie Taylor Greene is. And so suddenly, in a weird way, this Democratic blitzkrieg, this assault against her, has enlarged her reputation, has made her profile. It allows her now, and she's liberated. She doesn't owe anything to anybody. She can become a powerful fighter and a powerful spokeswoman on behalf of her principles. So congratulations, Marjorie Taylor Greene. You beat them at their own game. Keep fighting. Today we are in a battle for truth, and I'd like to recommend an insightful book to you called Reflections on the Existence of God by best-selling author Richard Simmons III. He writes on a whole bunch of topics, life, death, sex, truth. Reflections on the Existence of God is a collection of short essays that tackles the biggest question of all. Does God exist? The book is well-researched, easy to read, and is now a bestseller on Amazon. Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I've ever read. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, I encourage you to get your copy of Reflections on the Existence of God by Richard Simmons III. Visit reflectionsdinesh.com to learn more about the book and get exclusive access to the first chapter for free. Go to reflectionsdinesh.com now. That's reflectionsdinesh.com. Reflecting on everything going around us, from the Marjorie Taylor Greene business to AOC's extravagant thespianism to the upcoming Senate impeachment trial, I want to reflect on the opposite tactics that are used by our side, the right, and their side, the left. To sum up where I'm going with this, it seems clear that the left overreacts dramatically when they are on offense. They press their advantage. And then they underreact when they're on defense, pretending like it's no big deal. We, the conservatives, the Republicans, do the opposite. We underreact on offense. In fact, sometimes we don't react at all. We have no offense. We're the dog that didn't bark. And we overreact on defense, as if we have something to prove. We're always sort of up against the wall, explaining ourselves. Now, let's illustrate these two points by starting with the other side. Here's a glimpse of AOC in full AOC mode, talking about what was essentially a non-insurrection, a non-terrorist event in which no one on the other side was actually killed. Oh, five people died! It's now emerged very clearly that even the police officer, the one guy who was supposed to have been killed by, oh, he was hit by a fire extinguisher. No, evidence has shown he wasn't. That's not how he died. So the truth of it is, the only person who was subjected to lethal force in this entire insurrection was one of the protesters. There were no casualties on the other side, and AOC's rhetoric, I'm now quoting her, it's not an exaggeration to say that many, many members of Congress were nearly assassinated. Talk about overreaction. Here's AOC.
And I did not go to the secure location because I feared other members of Congress that would have allowed harm. To me,
it would be one thing if it was just her. She is known to look at her life as if she's on a movie set. Seems like she lives for social media. You know, I was hiding. Ted Cruz was on the other side of the door waiting to assassinate me. I mean, this is AOC's, mental turmoil, if you want to call it that. And now, of course, she's reduced to things like, well, it may not have happened, but that's how I felt. Don't devalue my feelings. Now, but it's not just her, because the whole Democratic Party is on board. Look at the rhetoric in the House manager's brief to the Senate on impeachment. They keep talking about acting as if this was some kind of invasion of the White House by an alien force, like the British attacking the White House in the early 19th century. Even historian Michael Beschloss, who should know better, listen to this guy. On both September 11, 2001, and January 6, 2021, terrorist haters of democracy, tried to attack our Capitol and Congress. And then he goes on to say that January 6 was worse. But on January 6, they actually managed to invade the building and put our leaders and our democracy in danger. We had a close call and must never forget. Leave aside the fact that there was no real danger. The truth of the matter is, this is the kind of exaggeration, overreaction that the left specializes in. By contrast, when they do really bad stuff and they should be on the defensive, they act as if it's no big deal. They underreact. They massively pretend like, what? What's nothing going on? Even if something is going on right behind them, they look at you with a straight face and go, there's nothing to see here, folks. Remember the riots, the murders, the arson unleashed by Antifa and Black Lives Matter? Here is a leftist journalist basically giving you the no big deal.
I, I, I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not generally speaking, unruly.
So that is the left. It's very crafty. In fact, it's essentially just denial, flat-out denial. Nothing's happening here, folks. Now, let's turn to the right, because what happens with the right is there are a lot of issues where the right should be on full offense. Look at the stuff with Ilhan Omar marrying her brother. Is that true? Where's the investigation that was demanded by the Republicans to find out if it's true? Because if it's true, you've got a sitting congressman who evaded the immigration laws. And let's even leave aside the incestuous aspect of the whole thing. And then there's one scandal on top of the other, and essentially the Republicans do nothing. They underreact on the offense. Meanwhile, they overreact on the defense, and a classic example is Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm looking at a thread that was really put out by a Republican congressman from Florida talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene, and this is basically what he says. Marjorie Taylor Greene's remarks are unacceptable. This is, by the way, Mario Diaz-Balart. I've previously stated MTG's comments are unacceptable, and today I voted to remove her from her committee assignments. So he feels like he has to take action. Then he has a long thread, and he goes, but what about Ilhan Omar and her scandals? And why was it excusable for Rep. Maxine Waters to falsely accuse the U.S. government of deliberately trying to poison inner cities? We can't forget Congressman Cynthia McKinney, who engaged in Holocaust denial, and blah, blah, blah. So let's think about it. You have a Republican who's essentially saying, I'm going to take action to land a blow on someone on my own side, while in a futile way appealing to the Democrats to take similar action to chastise their extremists, even though if Mario Diaz-Balart had half a brain, he would know the Democrats have no intention of doing so. His appeal to higher principle is nothing more than a worthless Twitter thread. Essentially, what he's done is he's allowed himself to become an instrument of the other side. They're making him hammer his own side and feel good about it, while he calls upon them to do something that he knows they're not going to do. So if you wonder why Republicans lose battles, battles that they can win and should win, it's because when it comes to the art of warfare, the other side presses its advantage, defends relentlessly against attack. Our side doesn't mount similar attacks, and when attacked, essentially begins to run helplessly and pathetically for cover. Let's toughen up, GOP. We can win. Let's even learn from some of the tactics on the other side. Do you think there's a coincidence between Biden signing over 40 executive orders in his first couple of weeks of office and the price of silver skyrocketing? No, no coincidence. Savvy investors know that precious metals are a hedge against inflation and government stupidity. And Birch Gold Group is not only your headquarters for gold, but silver too. If you want to purchase physical gold or silver, drop shipped straight to your door, or help converting an IRA or eligible 401k into an IRA backed by gold and silver, Birch Gold Group is your solution. They are the premier precious metals IRA company in America with an A+ Better Business Bureau rating, countless 5-star reviews, and thousands of satisfied customers. And guess what? I'm one of them. There's a tidal wave of inflation coming. Gold and silver are your hedge. Text Dinesh to 484848 for your free information kit on a precious metals IRA or to speak with a Birch Gold representative today. Time is running out, but you can protect your savings now. Just text Dinesh to 484848. John Kerry is one of those pillars of the Democratic establishment. And he's a wonderful example of the Peter principle, which basically says that people rise to their true level of incompetence. You can get a window into how bankrupt this liberal establishment is by looking at Kerry. The good thing about Kerry is that it's not just that he's wrong on some things. He's basically wrong on everything. He has a record of wrongness, of calling it wrong, you might say, that is almost unmatched. And for a recent example of that, you can see Kerry pontificating about the Palestinians. Listen.
There will be no separate peace between Israel and the Arab world. I want to make that very clear to all of you. I've heard several prominent politicians in Israel sometimes saying, well, the Arab world's in a different place now. We just have to reach out to them and we can work some things with the Arab world and we'll deal with the Palestinians. No, 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 and no.
You know, if you're watching, if you're listening on audio, I have to describe the scene here because you've got Kerry. He's got his glasses sort of slid down his nose. He's reclined in a kind of avuncular stance, and he has this know-it-all look on his face, like, you know, that he's been there. He's going to tell you the way it really is. Except he's completely wrong. Trump, strolling into government with literally no foreign policy experience, whatever, negotiates a whole bunch of deals and treaties and pacts between Israel and Muslim states, Gulf states, and refutes Kerry almost backhandedly, almost like, hey, gee, there you go. You're wrong. Wrong again. Wrong again. Wrong again. Now, Kerry is Biden's climate man. And it's recently come to light that Kerry went to Iceland in 2019. And while telling all of us that the Earth is in an existential crisis, humanity hangs in the balance, we've just got a few more years to get this right, otherwise we're going to be beyond repair, Kerry flies to Iceland in a private jet. Now, what's really amusing is what Kerry says when he's called on this. And some Republican senators have actually called him on it. Bill Cassidy, for example, noting Kerry's hypocrisy. Senator Tom Cotton basically pointing out, gee, Kerry, you know, while costing jobs and telling Americans to go find jobs elsewhere in solar industries and so on, here you are flying in a private jet. Here's Kerry's response. It's the only choice for somebody like me, that's the key word, somebody like me, who is traveling the world to win this battle. So in other words, he's basically giving two reasons. He's a superior person. He's not like everybody else. For someone like him, there's only one choice. And second, he's allowed to make this choice because he's fighting the battle. He's on the right side. It's almost like being on the right side gives you immunity to the rules. I make the rules. I'm worried about coronavirus, so I don't have to wear a mask. I want to take down the wall around the United States, but I can have one around my own house because, after all, somebody's like me needs special treatment. And then Kerry says this. And I believe the time it takes me to get somewhere, I can't sail across the ocean. I have to fly to meet with people and get things done. Wait, nobody told him to go to Iceland in a sailboat. The real issue is, why doesn't he fly commercial like everybody else? Why doesn't he put a bunch of people on the same plane instead of Kerry taking his own plane and adding on? Now, here's the point. It's not just that Kerry is a hypocrite. It really shows that deep down he knows there is no existential crisis. Why? Because anybody who thought that there was an existential crisis wouldn't act like this. Think about it this way. Let's say that you have a ranch and somebody tells you that there are outlaws surrounding your ranch and they've sounded the alarm and it's a real panic and they want to burn your ranch and take all your stuff and kill you and your family. And you tell your wife, you know what? I think I'll go out and take a walk. And your wife goes, wait a minute, what about the outlaws? And you go, well, you know, I really need the exercise. People would say, you don't believe that there are outlaws out there with knives and guns waiting to kill you. Because if you did, you wouldn't go out and take a leisurely walk knowing the danger that you yourself have been warning about. So the bottom line of it is, Kerry's own actions give the lie to the idea that there is an existential crisis, for the simple reason that if someone genuinely believed it, genuinely believed that the earth is hanging by a thread, would take actions commensurate with that. But the fact that here's Kerry and he's got a huge home and he's using all this fuel and this, and by the way, this is not just Kerry, it's true of Al Gore, it's true of all these guys. Obama buys oceanfront properties while warning against swelling oceans and flooded coastlines. He doesn't believe that's going to happen to his coastline. Same with Kerry. He's very comfortable taking a private jet. What he really means to say is he wants us to go into existential crisis mode and alter our behavior while he does nothing to alter his. Hey, did you notice recently that Newsmax, and these people are supposed to be on our side, embarrassed Mike Lindell of MyPillow? They invited him on the show, on the channel, to talk about why he was banned on social media. And then when he raised the subject of voter fraud, the host became visibly uncomfortable and literally ran off the set. I thought to myself, why did he do that? And I think the answer is obvious. He was worried about being banned himself on social media. And right here, you see the courage of Mike Lindell. This guy, by the way, doesn't just bloviate about election irregularities. He put up his own money to hire a forensic firm to investigate what's really happened. And he's trying to get that information out there. And truth be told, I'm actually more angry about the fact that we can't talk about voter fraud than even about the fraud itself. Mike is in the front line of this critical fight, and we need to support him. We've got to make sure the left doesn't win in this effort to cancel Mike Lindell. The good news is that there's a way to support him. Mike makes terrific merchandise. Check this out. This is Debbie, my wife, and me in our MyPillow robes. I can't think of a better gift for Valentine's Day, which is coming up really soon. It certainly beats the chocolate-covered strawberries every time. And Mike has over 100 items, from sheets to pillows to blankets to towels to dog beds and, yes, robes. They're all available at deep discounts if you use the promo code Dinesh. So here's what you should do. Call 800-876-0227 and use promo code Dinesh, or just go to MyPillow.com. But just make sure to use promo code Dinesh. Here's a remarkable article in the New York Times, how the Biden administration can help solve our reality crisis. Now, you have to think for a moment to realize how Orwellian this is. Evidently, we are in a reality crisis, a crisis of being able to determine what is reality. And the New York Times, an independent newspaper, is calling on the government to solve this problem by adjudicating reality. There are several proposals in this article, but one is for Biden to create a kind of cross-governmental network headed by a reality czar, I kid you not, to essentially proclaim, this is reality. That's not reality. Those people who say that, they're not living in reality. Now, it seems that Orwell's 1984, far from being a dystopian warning, has become almost, you may say, a democratic handbook. It's almost like we're living in some crazy, surreal future where a group of vicious loons have taken over the country and they've stumbled upon Orwell's book and they go, oh man, this guy really had it going on. This is awesome. Let's do this. This is really what we want. For those of us who are at the receiving end of all this restriction and censorship, it's terrifying. But of course, for the people who are on the side of the censors, they go, well, what censorship? No one's censoring us. Yeah, no one's censoring you, but censorship ultimately is about shutting people down who are critical of the government and critical of the powers that be. Now, I said a moment ago that I was more outraged by the fact that we can't talk about voter fraud than about voter fraud itself. The voter fraud can be disputed. There was voter fraud, of course. How much of it there was has never been fully established. Was it enough to overturn the election? That can all be debated, but that's the point. Why isn't it being debated? What's going on when there is a private-public alliance that recruits all these digital companies on its behalf to shut down people for stating misinformation? But what they claim is misinformation is not established as misinformation. Where is the proof that there was no election fraud? That's never been proven. In a free society, you're able to debate issues. You're even able to hold outlandish views. You're even allowed to have misinformation and spread it. Imagine if someone were to say 30 years ago, I think FDR knew that the Japanese were about to bomb Pearl Harbor. They may be right, they may be wrong. Why can't they say it? Or let's say someone says, I believe LBJ was involved in the plot to kill JFK. They might be right, they might be wrong. I think they're wrong, but let's say That's their view. Why can't they say it? No one stopped them from saying it. Or just a few years ago, people said Obama was born in Kenya. Now, I didn't say that. In fact, I said the opposite. I said Obama was born in Hawaii. I went to Hawaii. I went to the Kapi'olani Medical Center, where Obama was born. I said that Obama's ideas come from his father. So in that sense, his ideas have a foreign root, but not Obama himself. But there was no question that the people who said that had a free speech right to say it. The idea that they should be silenced or shut up or banned or thrown off or deprived of technology to communicate with each other. Just a few years ago, we knew that this was nuts. This was nuts. Now, it's one thing for these platforms to say, well, this is our platform, Twitter, Facebook. We don't want you saying things we don't like. Not misinformation, just we don't like it, and it's our platform, so you're playing in our sandbox, and we own the sandbox. I get that. That is an argument not based upon free speech or even justice. It's an argument based on power. And then they say to you, go start your own platform. Go where you can talk. You make your own sandbox. But then, when we do, Parler, an alternative to Twitter, the technology moguls mobilize to shut that down. Now, we must make this project of shutdown fail. We must make sure that alternative platforms do develop where we can speak. But right now, we are silenced, and that's a fact. We are silenced in the sense that there's a sword of Damocles over our heads, and if they have the power to cancel us, in effect, we're not free. We are at their mercy. We are at their behest. And then while they silence us, they attack us at the same time. It's not like they silence us and move on. No, they want to silence us. And while we are quiet, they demonize us. They present us as if we are some sort of Al-Qaeda type insurgents who want to overthrow the government. We're anti-democratic. We're enemies of freedom. We should be treated as domestic terrorists and domestic enemies. So all this incendiary rhetoric is directed at us, those of us who didn't even go to Washington, D.C. We're not near the Capitol, certainly didn't storm the Capitol. And our crime is not going along with what the digital moguls believe and what the left believes. They're trying to enforce a countrywide regime of a, not just a one-party state, but a one-party set of views, what the Nazis called Gleichschaltung, coordinating the whole society to march in lockstep with the National Socialist regime. So this is our chilling situation. I've never seen anything like it in my adult lifetime here in America. It shows that this election did have consequences, consequences that go beyond the normal ambit of politics. Essentially, the left is now demanding the right to set the parameters of discourse. You're allowed to comment within these parameters, but outside these parameters, if you do, we will shut you down, we will demonize you, we will turn you into a public non-person, and then we will set about, while you're defenseless, trying to destroy your life. If you know the D'Souzas, we're selective with our partnerships, and Eggard Watches is a company we are genuinely excited about. The CEO, Elon, is an immigrant entrepreneur, American success story. His company creates exceptional products, but Elon also cares about American values and has his own voice. Debbie and I watched some of the powerful videos on the Eggard website recently. You need to visit yourself to see the short films that they've created. What is Freedom is the first short film you'll see. Elon put his company on the line to take a stance on current issues like censorship facing America. Especially today, it's refreshing to see a business take a stand on principle. But it's not the first time they've taken a risk. Elon was awarded the Fox Patriot Award after he stood up for the police, releasing a film during the whole Defund the Police movement called Speak Truth. Finally, they made a video celebrating men called What is a Man? This was in response to Gillette Corporation painting the picture of toxic masculinity in American culture with a recent ad campaign. Again, all of these videos can be accessed on the front page of their website. Most important of all, Eggard makes incredible watches. Debbie and I are both wearing one today. I've got one on right now. And the craftsmanship and uniqueness is something to marvel at. Take a look. It just feels a lot more expensive than it is. Elon gave us a wonderful discount of 15% to share with you using the promo code Dinesh at the checkout. So now you have two reasons to visit Eggert Watches. EggertWatches.com is the website. Come for the watches, stay for the conservative films. We all know, everybody on our side knows the problems with big tech censorship, but what are we going to do about it? What are our leaders doing about it? For a long time, Republicans seemed to be doing precisely nothing. When they had the chance to impose restrictions on the tech companies by taking away their Section 230 protections, they did not do it. And then for a while, they simply would take to Twitter and say things like, the tech companies must suspend censorship. Essentially worthless bloviating, calling upon the tech companies, almost pleading with them, don't censor us. Now, you're a senator, you're a congressman, have some dignity, use your power, do something about it. Even pathetic Lindsey Graham recently, by the way, right after the Republicans lose the Senate, I'm going to get really serious now about tech censorship. I mean, this is not only disappointing, it's offensive. But there is one guy, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who is finally doing something. And here's what he's doing. He has a bill that is going to the House. And the good news is we're talking about a Republican House and a Republican Senate in Florida and a popular governor proposing these measures. And it's basically a series of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 punches against big tech. If you try to do censorship, here's what we are going to do to you. A right of action by private Florida citizens against tech companies that violate the conditions of free speech. Fines of $100,000 a day levied on any tech company that suspends a candidate for elected office in Florida for any reason. Daily fines for tech companies that use algorithms that try to rig which political party gets greater exposure. Greater transparency requirements, disclosure requirements. The Florida Attorney General has the power to bring cases against the tech companies under the Unfair and Deceptive Practices Act. So the key thing here is to make this law. Why? It then provides a kind of model for all the other Republican states to do the same. And finally, we're beginning to see someone step forward and take legislative action against these digital thugs. They need to be brought to heel. But listen, it's not going to happen under the Biden administration. They're doing the bidding of the Biden administration. Elizabeth Warren, about a year or so ago, wrote an op-ed in which she said, and I'm quoting her now, she vowed to make, quote, big structural changes to the tech sector to promote more competition, including breaking up Amazon, Facebook, and Google. But since then, once Biden is elected, she's gone dead silent on this. No proposals to this effect. And in fact, when there was a coordinated attack on Parler that was led by Google and then by Amazon, and then by Apple, all working together, almost a kind of coordinated effort to take down an alternative platform. Dead silence from Warren. So suddenly these champions of individual freedom can't be relied upon. Why? Because their side is using these companies for political advantage. I want to commend Governor DeSantis for going out front on this. I think it shows true leadership, the willingness not just to sort of pontificate, bloviate, but rather to do something that's going to make a real difference. You never thought COVID could cost you your home, right? It just might because cybercrime is up 75%. And by far the most serious cybercrime to worry about is home title theft. The job of the criminals is easier than you think. The title documents to our homes are now online. The thief finds your home title and forges your signature on a quitclaim deed stating you sold your home to him. Then he takes out loans on your home and leaves you in debt. You won't know until late payment or eviction notices arrive. Insurance doesn't cover you, and neither do common identity theft programs. That's why I protect my home with Home Title Lock. The instant home title lock detects someone tampering with my home's title. They help shut it down. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then use code RADIO to receive 30 free days of protection. That's code RADIO at HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. The Department of Justice has sent a bizarre and troubling letter to Elon Musk, accusing him of preferring to hire American citizens over non-citizens for his SpaceX program. Now, according to the DOJ, in March of 2020, a non-US citizen who had asked about being hired in the technology strategy division of SpaceX was asked, "What's your citizenship status?" And DOJ attorney Lisa Sandoval says that SpaceX, quote, ultimately failed to hire him for the position because he is not a U.S. citizen or lawful permanent resident. Now, the DOJ has filed a request with a judge to order SpaceX to comply with an administrative subpoena for documents related to how the company hires. And apparently, what the DOJ, the Justice Department, is trying to find out is if SpaceX engages in, quote, any pattern or practice of discrimination, end quote. So it's evidently discriminatory to prefer U.S. citizens for SpaceX over non-citizens. And I want to ask, who would be so demented as to make this kind of a demand of Elon Musk or any American company? Is it the case that American companies shouldn't give any preference whatever to hiring Americans? And why is giving those preferences wrong? Now, the left has been developing a theory. They do these things by and large in academia initially, and they migrate into the media, then they're picked up more generally in the culture. Several years ago, the political philosopher Martha Nussbaum wrote an important essay. This was published in Boston Review. It was called Patriotism and Cosmopolitanism. And essentially, Martha Nussbaum argues, and I'm quoting her now, this emphasis on patriotic pride is morally dangerous. Morally dangerous. Why? Because she says it can lead to ethnocentrism, chauvinism, hatred of others. And she says that we need to have a higher ideal. What's this ideal? I'm quoting her now. An ideal that is in any case more adequate to our situation in the contemporary world, namely the ideal of the cosmopolitan, the person whose primary allegiance is to the community of human beings in the entire world. So, in other words, our main allegiance should be to humanity, not to Americans. Now, let's start by thinking about this for a moment, because it's appealing on the surface. Obviously, think about the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. Interestingly, it doesn't say all Americans are created equal. All men, all persons, all human beings are created equal. And the implication is by their creator, so in God's eyes. We're not going to dissent from that. We agree. So what then is the argument for nationalism or patriotism in a world that does contain these equal human beings who do have these equal and natural rights? I think it was the philosopher Edmund Burke, the author of Reflections on the Revolution in France, who said, and I'm now quoting him, to be attached to the subdivision, to love the little platoon we belong to in society, is the first principle of public affections. And here's what Burke is getting at. Even though we are all human and we are part of a big world, it's very difficult to attach our natural affection to everybody in the world. The philosopher, well, actually the economist Adam Smith a long time ago talked about the natural reaction anywhere in the world when a catastrophe occurs far away. He's talking about a group of people in any country, that could be India, and something happens, let's say in Nigeria, 10,000 people are killed in an earthquake. What's the reaction? according to Adam Smith, the Indians go, oh, did you read about that? Hey, Sanjeev, did you hear about those 10,000 people? Terrible, terrible, terrible. And then the Indians go right back to eating their chicken tikka masala as if nothing had happened. It's almost as if an itch in their little toe would give them more trouble than 10,000 people being swallowed up by an earthquake. Now, what this is saying is that not that we deny that we're part of a global community, not at all, but rather we have a sort of primary attachment to our own family. And then we have an attachment that grows in concentric circles. We are attached to our local community. For many years, Americans thought that they had a primary attachment to their state, and then to the country, and then to humanity. So it widens and grows bigger, but it starts small. It starts with life as you can experience it directly. And this is the point, that loving your country is not ultimately an assertion that your country is necessarily the best place in the world. It might be in this case, but it may not be for others. But the truth of it is our country. And we have a certain type of, just as we have a duty to provide for our family and a duty to provide for our team, to fight on our side. Similarly, we have an allegiance to our country. Now, in a very interesting book called Imagine Communities, the author Benedict Anderson talks about how a country is an imagined community. It's kind of strange because it's a community, yet we haven't met everybody. We're attached to these other 300 million Americans, and most of them we know about, but we don't know them. But still, there is a kind of fierce attachment. Think of it. People would not become soldiers and jeopardize their lives. They wouldn't become first responders and put their lives at risk to save who? People who would seem to be strangers, but no, they're not total strangers, they're fellow Americans. And all of this means that there is a lot of truth in the Trumpian assertion that even though we are members of the human community, that in some things, and I think SpaceX is definitely one such thing, it is quite right to put America first. Want to belong to a senior organization you can trust? That's AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC is the fastest growing conservative 50 plus organization in America. Over 2 million people have joined and now carry the AMAC membership card. AMAC was built by folks who feel the same way we do. AMAC stands up for the values that have made America great: faith, family, and freedom. They believe in the sanctity of our Constitution, including the First and Second Amendments. They're fighting against the ever-expanding scope of the federal government. They are pro-small business, secure borders, support our military, and respect our veterans. AMAC works hard to deliver real value to their customers, providing the best benefits, discounts, and services that members can find in one place. Join AMAC today. Debbie and I are lifetime members. Go to amac.us and join now. Join AMAC today. That website again, amac.us. So I'm back with my other half, Debbie. Honey.
Hi, honey.
How's it going?
Hi, Chico.
You're actually looking really kind of well-rested today.
I've been well-rested for a while. I finally have that pillow that does it for me. So, and this isn't an ad for Mike Lindell or his pillows, but actually it is, because I want women out there that are having trouble sleeping to go get a pillow. And at Mike's Pillow, at mypillow.com, you can get that kind of pillow that you sleep. In other words, if you're a stomach sleeper, they have a stomach sleeper pillow, side sleeper, back sleeper. I mean, I literally found my pillow.
Well, you also have the big body pillow.
Yeah, well, that's the body pillow, so that way I can just kind of wrap my legs around it and I sleep so soundly. I don't want to get up to come do the show. That's how well I'm sleeping. Love it.
I got to get your reaction to something in the news. Age-related cognitive decline reversed in mice. Can we extend the result to humans? So let me tell you a little bit about this. Apparently, as we get older, human beings and other creatures have a certain type of brain inflammation. It has to do with the microglia, a type of white blood cell. So scientists have figured out a way to reduce this inflammation and reverse cognitive decline in mice. And my question is, does this provide some hope for that rat Biden? What do you think?
Oh, boy.
I mean, this could be a... Do you think this might rescue him from his incoherence and mumbling and bumbling and...
No. I don't think that the Democrats are going to want him to know about this.
Why?
Because I don't think they want him in there, really.
You think there's a plot to to take him off the stage gracefully?
So. I think so. I do. Yeah. I don't know when, but, I think that that's... probably in the works, and
maybe what they could do once they move him out is put him in an asylum, hire actors who essentially pretend like he's still the president. He has a desk. They bring him executive orders. He signs them. Of course, nothing happens, but he continues to live in a dream world in which he's still president. But actually, it's President Harris. Is that where you think the Democrats want?
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, see.
I wanted you to come on today because this is our kind of last mailbox section. And we have a question, but it pertains to you. In fact, we have, I wouldn't call him a skeptic, but somebody who asks a question about your singing. So we're gonna listen, and then I'm going to let you respond.
Dennis, my question is, can Debbie really sing? Because I know you're from India, and in Bollywood, all they do is lip sync in all those movies. And I was just wondering, can she sing on your podcast just to prove that she can really sing?
Okay, so that I think he's issued the challenge. He sounds like, I don't know if he's from India or Bangladesh, but he sounds like a foreign guy who like is not going to take it for granted. He knows that they have all kinds of stunts in Bollywood and stuff. So I think, I don't know if you're ready for this, but you need to do a little bit of proof that you can actually sing. Mm-hmm. Do it here. I know there's no background.
I know. Do you mind if I drink some of your water?
Go for it.
Because I have to lubricate before
this
I sing.
This is our parlor cup, by the way. Here you go.
Okay. I know I'm a germaphobe, but, okay.
Exactly.
All right.
You just need to belt out a few bars to convince the Bangladeshi skeptic that you can sing.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies. For amber waves of grain.
I think you've proved your point.
I think he needs to know that, as a singer, I prepare, I lubricate, I drink my water, I do vocal rest. Which I did none of those things for now. So, that was kind of my voice with no training, no planning, no nothing. So
Now in the movie Death of a Nation, you did sing and you sang on stage.
Yes.
And I think it'd be kind of cool. Maybe we'll close out the podcast by letting people see you. Now you're not singing.
I'm singing Oh America.
Which was the Celtic woman song.
Yes.
And I think, you did such a great job that there were people who thought that it was Celtic woman. But it was no. It was Debbie D'Souza singing Oh America to close out the movie Death of a Nation.
Oh America, you're calling. I can hear you calling. You are calling me to be true to thee, true to thee. I will be. Oh, America.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.